Don't the brass stats.
Good afternoon, Mr. Alex.
Yes, welcome.
How are you today?
I am okay.
It sounded like if you were in your seat there just now. Anyhow, contain yourself, man. Don't knock yourself too much. Nobody ain't gagging me. Rest assured. You see, you talk about something about Black Lives Matter and something there just now and whatever. Let me talk about something that I have a concern about. You came across the article in the Nation on the 17th on page 5 about the sunset severance legislation.
Yes.
Are you heard?
I'm aware of it.
What is your view on it?
Well, I understand it's objective. It is that many companies in the country do not have the money to pay people the severance that they would be entitled to under the normal rules. And therefore, what the government has sought to do is to give them a little bit more breathing space. Because the truth of the matter, the way that some people look at it is this. If they don't have any money and you force them to pay what they don't have, you shut the place down and the people have no job by the end of the year.
You know what I'm really interested in? I'm profound. I don't know where the bank account, neither you. So we begin on the basis that you don't know, no, I don't know, but you're going to hear about they don't have any money. I am saying they got the money.
How you know?
No. Well, how you know that they ain't got it? How do you know?
We go by the trends. We go by the fact that, for instance, that we have been through 12 years now of great difficulty in business in this country. And on top of that, we've also had COVID. Where are they going to get your money from?
Yeah, all right. So
are we talking about, and listen, let me tell you, I'm talking about little people, you know. I talk about medium to small enterprises in Barbados, and there are many of them. They're talking about people who employ other people as maids, gardeners, and home help, and nurses for their elderly parents and that sort of thing. I'm talking about them people too, you know.
You want me to answer? Because we can really dialogue. Now, when you hear somebody, when it was a boy, and they come out here, somebody who in those days, you hear God's servant, you should feel like they're kind of above the rest. Yeah, we're calling the class off a little more than the average person. When you see a person got a helper and a and we call it domestic and whatever. And a person's estimation is a person that can handle a dollar. This be our baby and a handle a dollar. Or a certain
that's when you were growing up. You still believe that?
If I still believe it. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something. You and Barbados, like me, you are on the ground. And you know, we could sort of get a semblance and an idea as to who can afford certain things. That's where you're always from yawning. You talk about tests and all that, you know. Because I know some people just claim they ain't got, but they can afford it.
You haven't answered my question.
Well, let me hear your question again.
You said when you were growing up,
yeah,
you were of the view that anybody who employed a maid had to be somebody of means.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put it this way. Mm-hmm. Take the person who has to employ someone to assist them with a sick parent.
Uh-huh.
Or somebody who has, it was infirm. Does that mean that that person has money because they are doing that? Or don't many people find themselves scrambling nonetheless because the system in this country is structured in such a way that you are forced, if you want to have that person exposed to a certain degree of round the clock treatment or half day treatment or whatever, it is easier to do that than to look for public assistance in dealing with it. That doesn't mean you have money.
You're sticking on to this having money, but let me tell you something. You know, this is way more you discuss with me. Mm-hmm. There are companies we know, they're 40 years in business, 50 years in business, 25 years in business, and shut the doors. I am saying this is my unreserved comment here. That the word option, as it was applied with the bond, with thing, should be applied with this. Look, there's a guy that Barry Friday, and he was calling for his money, cray blood. What's going on? The point I'm making, there are persons, you see this thing you call the option? There's some people that would have preferred to have their money, and there are big companies and establishments that they're working with. And when you get it to that end of the scale, I am saying you should give those persons the option. The people that can afford. We know the companies that can afford.
Well, which companies can afford? You know the companies. I don't. Let me say to you, With the exception of one company that just came out and spoke quite, you know, loudly about what has happened in the last year or so. There are very few companies that I have heard come and celebrate. Not everybody. But I'm not.
And nobody can afford it. Nobody could not have given some of these workers the option and tell them, yes, they can pay you.
Ron, all I'm saying to you is, look, there are good people and there are bad people.
All over the world.
There are good companies and there are bad companies.
Right.
There are people who sometimes may be able to afford it, but will behave as though they can't. All right? But I can say this to you. But my only point to you on this is when you look at the general picture, if you look at what companies in Barbados have had to endure over the last 12 years, it seems to me.
But they didn't shut the doors, you know.
They didn't shut the doors, but a lot of them sent home people and stuff to survive. You know how many people went home because of it? People try to find all sorts of creative ways. Who didn't go home decided that they were going to try as best as they could to combine this particular task and that particular task to get people to buy into understanding why you got to do it differently. I mean, people, the re-engineering of the business place in Barbados has been going on now for a very long time. So I'm not going to dispute that there are people and companies that are doing it the wrong way, but the environment has forced the majority of the people who are running these operations in the country to suck salt on many occasions. Basically, I would go with the view that more people have had to make a sacrifice
I got your advanced question here now. What is your take? You feel person should have been given the option as if they can have the severance or not? A lady came in Saturday and I tell her, cool it. Can't cool your head, man. She gone 26 years and she would have preferred her severance, you see? She says she was at a funeral.
So she was upset about the sunset legislation.
Yeah, but she said the front of and said, but people paid the respect to the deceased thing. But she said all the conversation and that second was about their severance and this and that and that. I am saying that some people would have preferred the severance and lay low until the situation improved or whatever.
I appreciate that perspective, but As usual, I always try to get you to look at it from another angle as well, or at least present that to you. And that is the angle of the people, for instance, in the tourism sector, who say that if they just do not have the money to pay severance to those people who've been working with them, through no fault of their own, COVID came and the bottom dropped out of the tourism sector.
You're right.
What do you do with those people?
I can tell you, if I'm going to answer you, I never see the pay books, nor do you. So I can go
So you're going to assume that they have money.
I'm going to go on to the view that I feel they're in business for umpteen amount of years and some of them got $4 million bank accounts for $6 million each. But let me give you one that.
If I ask you this question,
I can give you a clarion.
The analogy is this. When did you start working?
In 1969.
You're 67 years old.
I was wrong way along, man.
Right.
I'm sorry, started like that. But
let me ask you something, Roll.
Yeah.
If something happened that you couldn't work for the next 4 months, what happened to your life?
Don't bring it back personalized with me. Leave out me.
No, Roll. You can't. The point is, even if you don't want to answer the question, you know other people out there who have been working for as long as you have been working. And if we follow your logic, somebody would say, but you know what? So he has been working all of these years. And you mean to tell me that he can't withstand being without a job for 6 months?
Well, I guess that could be reasonable.
All right, then. And you, and when you look at it, then you start to examine all of the
people that could this is reverse. So what you've just said also. There's all also right. the reverse. There are persons who would have been so set that the 6 months or
you think they're in the majority? You think that they're in the majority?
I don't know.
Come on. You know about the companies, but you don't know about people that live with you every day?
But let me give you this one. Let me give you this closing one. That is interesting. You remember we had a situation since the COVID, a big company that does not have any competition, that they say they're going to cut the wages, et cetera. And, you know, in the weekend, there was a discussion as to the restoration wages and whatever. You remember that recently?
Yeah, I remember that. Huh? I remember that.
Good. Now, you see things like that. You don't have no competition. You're a monopoly. You got things. But you break. You can go and cut wages.
I don't think that...
guarantee. You know you could afford a thing. You don't have no, you cut no wages. Because you don't have no competition.
And but then, look, but Brawl, how many companies are in that position in Barbados?
I didn't want right now. We can use one.
But they're not many of them. There are many companies in Barbados that you can describe as, and accurately so, as enjoying a monopoly.
Yeah. You see this word monopoly? I can tell you something, though. I don't like the monopoly talk at all. I would like the prime minister. You see, like, how this flow and all them is doing. They're like brand companies, and let everybody set up the shop. And who has the best package, as you all often say to me, it is what you call market forces. Let market forces dictate if they should survive or not. Who has the best package and accommodation and whatever, you will go with. I love that. And break the neck in the monopoly, and let some of these people that are carrying a monopoly and buy a jump, not going to know the players.
Well, I know the sentiment that exists in Barbados. Part of what is being said time and time again in this country is that people are dissatisfied with the relationship between capital and labor in Barbados. Mm-hmm. It manifests itself in different ways, and this is one.
Right.
There is a deep distrust of people in business.
Yeah.
That distrust is not only of white people in business, you begin there, but it is also of black people in business. And the question is, how are we going to tackle both of these issues going forward? What are we going to do? How can we make an improvement in this situation? The discussion that is erupting over Minister Sutherland's comments. You see, if Minister Sutherland had made these comments last year or something like that, they may not attract the same kind of attention that you're getting now, because what we are in an era, into a period where the discussion that is taking place outside of Barbados has seeped into and is now a part of Barbados. And this is where it is going to become exceedingly difficult for the political leaders in all of these political parties, because of how difficult it is to dismantle the Barbadian structure, the Barbadian way.
I can give you this one out. You see this thing about, we have a thing I've called on Mr. Labour relentlessly and repeatedly in regard to, I want you employing up. He said nobody used to come here with a bag of money and dictate and do it. He said that, quote him. No bag of money can go here and do it. But let me give you one. You see somebody, some of the worst things have been happening in recent times with labor laws and unions and whatever. You see people talking, it's something that I abhor. You taking a person and employ them, talking about on a contract. Then you're taking out the deductions from them and whatever. Hey, this contractual thing, you're on contract. Everybody's doing it, but it's also contract. And it's licking up labor rights and labor laws. You know, unions sitting back and land. You know, I mean, thousands of people.
Yeah, but you got to take into consideration.
Huh?
Well, you really, when you say A, you got to say B. Mm-hmm. Then when you look at all of the responsibilities that an employer has in Barbados right now. When you talk to employers, they themselves feel as though they're under siege. And you have to listen to both sides of this discussion.
Let me help you there. Let me help you there. I am saying categorically, commensurate pay for commensurate work. Now, when you're working and paying your salary, I want you to give a commensurate day's work or whatever, or meet the requirement of the period and whatever. And once you keep that balance, and that is sermon, focus and vigilance, commensurate pay for commensurate work. Any fooling around with that, you're going through the head.
All right, Raul, we've had a good time.
Pay me for what you're doing too.
We have had a reasonable run, so forgive me, but I have to leave you. Thank you very much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Alex. How are you?
I am well, sir. And you?
I am good, too. You know, I had to tell you that it seemed like you were going to be the last man left. And you were seen as the boy of the burning deck.
Hmm.
Right. So it seemed like that is how it's going to end.
What's
the position with Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Johnson has been ill and is recovering.
Okay. What's the position of Mr. Beckham? He's coming tomorrow?
No, Mr. Beckham was with me today, and you heard Mr. Beckham quite a lot in the last 2 weeks.
Well, that's why I was saying, I was wondering if he is the lifesaver now or if he's still the last resort.
Perhaps he's both.
Well, let's ask him.
You can ask him. He's the better person to ask, not me.
he coming this week at all?
No, not, excuse me, not from what is planned.
Okay.
But you're here next week, for sure.
All right. Or based on the discussion you just had there, Mr. Allen.
Yes.
We just had the height of the COVID-19. And we had some workers.
The first phase.
Well, the height, we call it the height of it. But we had some workers that was branded as some frontline workers. And the clapping and the lens did it for them too, or how good they stood up to the test of keeping the supermarkets open. And as it gets a little easier, Mr. Ellis, they lay them off. And I ain't hearing you or the union fighting nothing for them. But no, you could be here fighting, but who could pay and who can't pay? And they're just as much business, or possibly more, than when they was running the long hours. They did it in shorter hours because the workers stood up to the test, Mr. Ellis. And as they get easy, they lay them off. And now we can hear excuses. And when you check, you see it is the bigger ones, you know, the small ones trying to hold on to their hands.
I want you to know that what you want to do with big players often affects small players too. And there are far more small players than there are big players. When you pull them all together, they really account for a lot of what we have. We're trying to do this in a manner that it takes into consideration the concerns and the issues that confront both the people who are the employers and those who are employed. Because ultimately, you want employers to be able to expand. You want them to be able to create more opportunities for people to get jobs rather than trying to rely upon a system that we complain about all the time, which is one that relies upon politicians to create the jobs. And so I understand the point that you're making, but what I really need to push more of you onto is a platform where you are discussing, so, okay, this is the problem. What's the solution? How can we fix this? What do we need to do to improve it, to make sure that more people become enfranchised? Economically so. You know, when you look at it, what do you think we could do differently? How does the government operate right now to the disadvantage of one or the advantage of the other?
Mr. Ellis, listen to me, Mr. Ellis. Mm-hmm. I could understand the hotels would be under pressure because they just operate with gas. The supermarkets that sell food or foodstuffs. And they sold more foodstuffs in the COVID season than they would normally sell. And they showed no loyalty to their workers and laid them off. That's why I want you to speak on, Mr. Ellis. And they should never have done that. The Prime Minister from the outset asked people to hold on. Let me try and write it out. They even asked even landlords and the banks and everybody to hold on, give people a period of time to catch back.
But the same government that's just so raising the port charges?
Well, that is a entity that can take care of itself. I wouldn't even get
No, but that those costs are passed on to the people.
But that can take care of itself.
So when the costs are passed on to the public, that's taking care of itself?
No, it was...
Or you obviously, you caught by surprise. You didn't even think about that one.
No, it was spread around. No, I know that once it put on, it can spread. It was always so from the days up in the wall. The elected man used to strike, the merchants given to them, and then pass it on. So passing it on is nothing new. These are things that they know from there back then.
No, you see, you would go after the little people in business. But when it comes to the government agencies and stuff, you have a different posture altogether.
No.
Because, you see, deep down inside of your soul, there's an anti-business person lurking.
That is not true, Mr. Ellis. And I'm not going after no little people.
Big people and little people. Big people and little people. But when you finish with the big people, what you apply to them must be applied to small people too.
Mr. Ellis, asking the people that just get the best out the workers to show a little loyalty to the workers, it cannot talk about this body or the
well, I no. When you Strikers, let me ask you this.
Mr. Ellis,
you can stop. Stop. How do you know? Let me ask you. When you look at the whole COVID period, on what basis can you determine what financial outcome these people have had? Because there was an early period where there was this surge and that sort of thing. But it then evened out in a matter of days. So how can you be so certain that they have done so well?
Mr. Ellis, that is the one thing that I qualified from early. I said you cannot say they make money because I don't know what other expenses they incur,
right,
but they turn over the business. I said that a certain amount of sales was probably more than what they would have had.
Probably, which means you weren't sure.
Probably. Cannot be sure.
Right.
But
so on the basis of a probability, you are then saying that they've done so well that they shouldn't be sending home anybody?
No, Mr. Ellis. I never put it down to doing well. I'm saying the workers show loyalty to them, come out in the face of the COVID, work the shorten hours, intact as ever, and get out the same volume or more of work.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know full well that it comes right back to the bottom line. It is not just the effort, but it is how that effort is translated into revenue versus expenditure and profit. That's what it comes back to. So until you get those figures, you can't be out here beating up on the people like that.
Mr. Ellis, it can't all boil down to that.
All right.
The workers show loyalty to them and come long to work in a COVID situation.
Okay.
That should work some kind of goodwill, Mr. Allen.
I suppose you can tell me the same thing about you calling the program during COVID, and that they should show you goodwill too.
Well, you know me. You know we just line up on that all the time. I just tell you already when it gets to me, it can come with a big fee, and I could negotiate it myself. Mm-hmm.
All right,
so you don't go showing a sympathy towards me.
Have a good day. Down the brass sacks. Hello.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yes, hi, how are you?
I am well. I want to touch on something I saw in Nation newspaper today on page 6 about a manual on crop protection from green monkeys. I don't know if you're familiar with the article.
What concerns you about it?
What concerns me is that I don't understand told that the minister would take taxpayers' money and have someone who I believe ready money on the monkey, don't hear me, don't speak or evil, draft a document pertaining to protecting or helping farmers to get protection from green monkeys. Okay? What I don't understand is that I am a farmer as well as a hunter. I've been doing this here for more than 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they never ever seem to want to consult who they should be really consulting.
All right. So we consulting you now.
But they take taxpayers' money. So what I see is a waste of time. I'm not even worth the ink or paper that they use to print it on.
We are consulting you now. Tell me, how would you address this green monkey problem?
The green monkey problem been here for more than 100 years. People have to realize, I hear people saying, that we destroy, or the government, I blame consecutive governments for destroying the monkey habitat. A little history lesson here, right? Barbados, once upon a time, almost all, every square foot in Barbados was under some form of crop production. Between the 1960s and present day, over 50 plantations across the landscape of this country have gone over production, meaning more forest, more bush, more playground for monkeys, mongoose, and rats. Now, so the argument these people talk about, we moving to monkey habitat, like Mr. Norville, the other day, talking about all the way the very former paradise hotel used to be, that the monkeys now gone into paradise lights and gone into Rosettes and going into other areas in Black Rock. Monkeys have always been in these areas. Okay? Monkeys are still down in the habitat, in the same area down there, so in Black Rock, and by the Lazaretta, and all by University Hill that he's speaking of.
Is it a problem for you? As far as you're concerned, is the monkey population a problem?
The monkey population is a problem for me, yes, because I am a farmer. I liaise with farmers on a daily basis. I'm inundated with calls, not only from farmers, persons in neighborhoods. Somebody got a few little seasonings or something growing in the windowsill, herbs just for use in the house. These monkeys are out of hand.
How do you think we should fix the problem?
There's only one fix. They have to be culled. They have people talk about sterilized monkeys. When you sterilize, you're going to catch 60,000 monkeys. I sterilize them. 60,000 plus monkeys. Impossible.
What is the resistance to culling the monkey population in Barbados?
The resistance is animal rights activists. Okay?
We have a lot of them.
We got them. We got a few of them. And we got people talking all the time about building a sanctuary for the monkeys. I got one gentleman who responded to our Facebook this morning. He don't want to see the monkeys get shot because he got one as a pet. So I asked him, when he catch all, I care all of them at him. I keep them as pets because they are nuisances to other persons. Right? We have to be real on this whole issue. The monkeys are here. I will die and leave monkeys. My children, my children's children, your children's children will die and leave monkeys here. It was an introduced species. It is not indigenous to Barbados. It is the African vervet monkey, which was introduced here. Okay? So they're talking about protecting the local green. It is not a local green monkey. It is an introduced species, which is a pest.
The impression I get is that we have a small group of people in Barbados who are animal rights people, but they seem to carry a lot of clout. And the reason why they carry clout is because they join up with people outside of Barbados who are also animal rights lovers, who are perhaps in key positions to exert pressure on us.
Well, to a certain degree. But I also read in the article on this morning that a person who is a foreigner who said they love animals, they don't eat meat or anything, but they have visited Barbados on many occasions. And one of the things I was stressing is a monkey's life more valuable than a human life? Because the person was stressing on that, but the simple fact is, he was here, and he said he saw and visited persons who grew crops, small persons. I saw people in tears because of the destruction the monkeys did. He said, although he's an animal rights person, he can understand that these animals have to be controlled. This is what I'm saying. There are people that have to be realistic about this thing, and there are people that are just speaking for the sake of speaking. Right? The reality of the matter is that monkeys cause millions and millions of damage across on a yearly basis. What I don't understand is, this is where they're calling monkeys local. More than 30 years, they say. My father been doing it before me, he gone to the other side. My grandfather before him, right?
It's a family tradition.
But it's not only tradition, but we do it because my family came through farming. My grandfather, my father was born in Highgate House in Highgate, St. Andrew. My grandfather used to manage Highgate Plantation and Borden Plantation. You will know those plantations basically are no longer in production. So I'm going back to the 50s and 60s and things like this, right? So they did it among not only them, but most of the farmers and farmers back in the day. As I said, these lands were under production. So the farmers and villagers and everybody would have managed the monkey population, first of all, because of the jungle to run it. They were hunting them with dogs, so they have dogs, but use shotguns or whatever the case is, and kept the population low. Over the years, because the whole landscape has become bushy, our plantations have gone to production. Monkeys do as they feel, mongoose do as they feel, rats do as they feel. Right? So I can understand the animals. We got three monkeys at my house that my wife has a pet, right? Three. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the monkeys, when they're mature, they don't make great pets. We have one there, believe it or not, it's very, very good. We got two little kids. The monkeys love the two little children, like nothing over this works. You probably protect the little children as well. The other two monkeys, I can't say so. Me personally, I don't like keeping them as pets, but.
But your wife likes them.
She loves them. She had a monkey before she had our first daughter. So she looked at the monkey as her child.
Okay.
Right? So for me to get rid of them, it would break somebody's heart. And I don't want to play things.
Well, I'm glad that you recognize where the power really lies. At least in that regard.
Exactly. Probably them there. But what I would not encourage other persons who don't have any knowledge of monkeys to keep monkeys as pets. Mm-hmm. I could agree with Mr. Norville on that point. Right?
Okay.
But the reality of the matter is, there is no solution but culling of these monkeys. Every day we get complaints of monkeys going in people's houses, going in people's gardens, and all in a lot of residential areas. And it is because two reasons. A lot of residents plant food and plant crops. So where a monkey can see an opportunity to get something easy, a monkey is a thief, basically. Right? A monkey is a thief. So if he can see opportunity to get something easy that he don't have to work for, he is going to take that opportunity. I traverse to a lot of gullies. I believe a lot of the gullies still have in mango trees, passion fruit vines, papaw trees that spring up because seeds get dropped from birds. A lot of the gullies still have mangoes, bananas. They still have a lot of fruit trees. Not a lot, but they still have trees there that these monkeys.
Okay.
These monkeys will venture out into crop areas that have crop just to be disruptive.
Okay.
They are not a type of animal like a rat. A rat will go out and pick up a piece of corn or a piece of bread and he will sit there on that loaf of bread and he will gnaw on that all night long. His stomach is
still need a national approach to the problem. There are too many people who are complaining about monkeys in the country. And the Ministry of Agriculture in particular really would be looked at as a ministry that should be leading the discussion and the action about what is to happen with them. Thank you very much for your enlightening call. Hello?
Hi, good afternoon.
Don't brass tacks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mr. Ellis, I was born and raised in Guyana.
Yeah.
All right. I'm Barbadian. But I've lived in Guyana, worked in Guyana during the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I hear the two people talking earlier about the elections, I got a slight idea as to what's going on because I've worked with both of them, right? And I can tell you this is personal, right? Guyana has a problem. And unless they manage electoral reform, every year we will be at the same place. Every time an election is called, we will have the same problem. You understand me? Mr. Ellis, what they fail to mention that this thing is really coming to light now because we have cell phones, we have cameras, and information is transmitted almost immediately. Now, Mr. Ellis, the election in Guyana.
Yes.
Right. Now, I've been living and working in Barbados for about 25 years now. All right, my wife and I, both of us work in the tourism industry. Now, tourism industry is no more. I heard you telling a gentleman earlier that, you know, you have to think, well, not your exact words, but you have to think differently about some person who has been working so long in this industry and can't be home for 6 months. Mr. Ellis, I'm a taxpayer. I work sometimes 2 and 3 jobs. You understand me?
Yeah.
I've been forced to call National Insurance within the last 2 months. Mr. Ellis, one day I was holding on the phone for about 4 hours. You know when eventually somebody answer what the woman told me?
What?
Your money has been calculated already, but it's not printed as yet. So I said, can you give me some information as to when I can get it or when I should expect it? She said, well, you're in the queue to get print. Mr. Ellis, that is the truth. You understand me? It doesn't matter if you work 3 and 4 and 10 years inside the ministry in the tourism industry and you can't be home for 6 months. The truth is that people want the money because I sacrificed to pay National Insurance, to pay all these benefits. Also, furthermore, Mr. Ellis, seeing that I'm home now for the last 4 or 5 months, I was thinking about cashing in my insurance. You understand me? But Clico is no more. So let me deal with what's happening now with these people, these 30,000-40,000 people that home, that soon from now, Mr. Ellis, these people ain't got nothing to put on the table. And then you call in National Insurance and they're telling you, you in the queue to get print yet? Mr. Ellis, this is unacceptable. Mr. Ellis, 2 years ago, I called you on this radio station complaining about a well in my community. Mr. Ellis, up to now, the well ain't get fixed. You understand me? They went and fixed 2 wells down the road from by me. You understand me? That in damage to this magnitude, the health inspectors know, they literally run from coming to my house. Mr. Ellis, it is not good enough. And I live just across the road from you. I live in Friendship Terrace. You understand, Mr. Ellis? So all this talk about, we got problems that we need fixing. I want my National Insurance money, and I want the well fixed. Even if I go wait another 2 months for my National Insurance money, I want the well fixed because my daughter can be 8 in September, right? And 2 years prior to me and my wife conceiving her, we had this well problem.
Well, what I would ask you to do is to just pass the information on to the producer here. And let me see if
I can do it again.
Do it again. Well, you did it 3 years ago, you said. So let me hope that the person that I can reach out to now will be able to get something done. Because 3 years ago, it might have been more challenging to reach out to somebody to get anything done of that nature.
So what about the National Insurance money now?
I don't know. The National Insurance problem, as you know, has a lot to do with the large number of people who need to get National Insurance right now because of the COVID-19 situation. So,
but Mr. Ellis, yes. You've been telling me.
I think, obviously, in these circumstances, one would expect that you would have to increase the number of people and, you know, the resources available. But even then, there may still be issues there. But just leave your contact details there with the producer and let's see what can be done. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yeah, good afternoon. With all of the Ghana elections and the Liat affair, that monkey thing was very interesting. I have to admit, I think that guy, even though I prefer that there be other options than just wiping out monkeys and stuff. But, I mean, yeah, there are issues that need to be considered. Yeah, of course. By the end of the day, there has to be a government position on that person. He got to go. He simply has to be removed. It's not where you go put him. It's not that he has to be dispatched of or, you know, dispensed of in some way. just stored, but just removed from where he is. I mean, that can't go. This issue can't be set aside. Government has to come with a response. We will move Lord Nelson. This is when we plan to do it. That's part one. And the second part, too, is it took the Jamaican people to identify the issue that we have with that. We should have with another racist depiction, that insignia that goes on the chest of those individuals who get a dame or sirship from the queen. And there are a few of them in Barbados still. And the government needs to put a position on that too. Because the Jamaicans have said, the Jamaican Governor General said he intends to deal with the queen on this and to make sure there's revision on these depictions, this one and all others going forward, because we can't. This is the Jamaican government's position. What is the Barbados government's position? Because quite frankly, if the Barbados government sided with the Jamaican, well, this is not really government, no, this apparently is the position of the head of state of Jamaica. If the Barbados head of state sided with the Jamaican head of state, who will side now with the Grenadian and the Antiguan? And I believe Dominica and Guyana don't have head of state. You know, well, it's not the people that report to the Queen. If they all came together and had a unified position within the next week, what would, I mean, Barbados include, of course, on this particular thing, then, of course, it becomes a bigger issue in England and, in fact, will probably make the kind of noise that would require the kind of attention that the Queen's people will take note of. So, I mean, let Barbados now join with Jamaica and say yes. We have an issue with this depiction of some black dude being stood on by some white dude.
Well, I'm told that it wasn't. I am told that it was not a person. It was supposed to be a dragon. But at the end of the day, it's still the very fact that the dragon is darker in color.
It's a Satan. It's a Satan depiction. And he's not only darker, he has naughty hair, wooden hair.
Right. So it's, you can understand how people. Yeah.
Or question me a black male. Yeah. And the guy had blonde hair parted in the middle or something with wings. So therefore, the image of God or some archangel has to be white. And the image of this, even if he wasn't standing up on the man's neck, even if he was just like.
But the devil isn't often depicted as black.
It is. Oh, that makes it right then. Okay, but no.
No, I say that makes it right. I'm just asking you.
So why bring it up in the first place?
Yeah, because I'm saying that is all part and parcel of how black people are portrayed. And I'm not saying that it is right. I'm not saying that it should remain. Don't interpret me
right,
that. Right. But you see, it's much of what part of a wider thing. I understand the point that you are making, and there are a number of people who feel that.
I don't want to dilute it. I don't want to dilute it. It's quite clear. I mean, quite plain.
Yeah, but your position is already clear.
No, it's not. I want to hear a position of government on these things. Lord Nelson, will it be removed and when? How are you going to deal with it? Where are you going to put it? This guy is going to be removed because it's in the wrong place. Lord Nelson, removal, and two, that insignia. This is, okay. Me. Come on, let's make a speech. It only takes 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. Don't the brass stacks.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
There's a young man in Barbados who would have worked on a very humane way with which to treat the monkey problem that we have in Barbados. I'm not going to call his name. I had worked with him some time ago. He's trying to raise some funding to get the project off the ground. And it was basically using the sound of the monkey, the warning sound that they make. And you place speakers all around the property, and there'll be sensors that can detect the particular area of entrance as the monkey comes onto the property. But be that as it may, I hope that this young man had gotten somewhere with the project. I'm not sure if they consulted with him, because it was a very ingenious project. I thought it was a really good project. So I'm not going to call him the same, as I said, because I don't know what stage that project is at. But I would hope that somebody is listening, and if he is listening, he's hearing me, and would probably reach out to those people who are interested in human treatment of how we can control and prevent the monkeys from destroying the farmer's property. Okay, that was my first point. Mm-hmm. I have an opinion on the discussion that just went down on Guyana. And I am not here to fight with anybody. I'm just simply here to state my opinion. And I thought that the back and forth on which party committed electoral fraud was not useful, and it didn't point us near to any resolve. Now, Guyana's politics is very complex. is race-based politics, and it needs to be assessed from that perspective. For me, what it really boils down to is a contest for political power and control over the newly found energy resources in Guyana. So I say, and this is my opinion.
Why would you say
that? Because
this kind of contest does not predate oil?
No, I'm not saying that. Let me just backtrack a bit, right? I say for me, it has boiled down to a contest for political power and control. And remember, I started by saying it is my opinion.
I heard you.
Now, we've had issues in Guyana before, all right? But it has never reached this stage. And it's reached a stage where it ought to be played out. It ought to follow procedural justice. And it ought to be played or left to be decided in the CCJ, the appellate jurisdiction of the CCJ.
What is? Let me ask you something.
No, let me finish, please.
I'm asking you a question, ma'am.
Don't shout at me.
I'm just asking you a question.
I'm hearing your.
I'm just asking you a question.
Tell me.
I don't understand why you need to be so, you know, antsy about it.
Yeah.
The critical issue has to be, what exactly is the CCJ to decide, and how can you conclude that the CCJ's decision is going to be seen as the final decision in all of this?
Okay, but that is not for you and I to determine. What is important that this matter is not played outside in the public domain. Let the procedural justice take preeminence in this matter. Whether the outcome is whatever it is, that is for
in other words,
and the CCJ.
In other
to
words,
determine.
The people of Guyana are to say nothing.
And we're not saying that. And I'm not speaking on behalf of the people of Guyana.
And people outside of Guyana must keep them all quiet.
And I'm not saying that either.
So what are
I
you saying?
I'm saying to you, sir, and I said it before, the back and forth on who committed electoral fraud and the historical context upon which Guyana's politics is based does not deserve to be treated in a discussion of the format that we had this morning.
Well, then you're entitled
to
your position.
Of course, it serves no useful purpose. They have a complex history of race-based politics. And if you want to resolve the issue of race-based politics in Ghana, you've got to start at the fundamentals. And the fundamentals have to do with the ideology that one race is supposed to rule for a particular period of time, and then another, and you know, that kind of back and forth. But the back and forth that we had this morning was not useful.
Well,
and that's my opinion.
Well, you are entitled to your opinion. Have a wonderful day. Down to brass tacks. Hello, welcome to the program. We're now at 1:47, so just have a few more minutes before we end today's edition of the program. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Good afternoon, David.
Hi.
Now, David, I really don't want to speak on the Ghana election because you know about in time. But what I will say is that I honestly believe if after Granger had lost the vote and our confidence and called the general election, we won't be having this discussion today. I think he went along and hold on for too long before we get the election. But what really going to be about is to really send a message to Minister of Public Works, William Duguay. I am calling on him to continue with the contract that the Transport Board has with the ZM operators. Because I find from the time they bring that program into fruition, David, transportation has increased tremendously. And indeed, they get a much more safer drive with those guys to compare with the ZNR and the minibus operators. And I know a lot of people welcome that decision to include the ZM, and I hope Minister Duguay will continue the contract and do not bring it to an end at the end of this month as they promised. Because the ZNR and minibus operators believe that they are law unto themselves, and they are continuing to endanger people like David. I saw a situation on Thursday on Black Rock Main Road, and it reminds me of the fatal accident that we had down Black Rock, you know, just opposite Flintstone.
Yeah.
I think the Midnight Assassin.
Yes.
In the same thing, come close to that. I mean, there was three Zedars, and each one was just behind each other. And mm-hmm. one overtook three vehicles. You should believe what you're saying to you. Three vehicles along the stretch of the road. All three of them trying to get away from each other. And I hope that the minister, Dugate, will continue with the Zedars and tell them aware. Because they are giving you a much more safer drive. And I believe, and I know for a fact, people welcome that decision to include them. In spite of the Zedars and minibus operators are saying. That's what I have to say, David.
Okay. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon.
149. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, David.
Hi.
Yes, I know the time is short. I would just like to use the airwaves to appeal to the Minister of Agriculture and the Chief Fire Officer, Mr. Maynard, to come and speak to the public regarding and farmers out here, these small farmers. Everybody's trying to help themselves to grow food here now because of the situation with this COVID. Now, we have been experiencing some problems in applying for the burn permit. There seems to be a number of discrepancies with regards to the officers who work in the actual fire service, because one body is telling you that a burn permit is only for one occasion. However, it was advertised that the burn permit, when you pay $150, it is for a year. And when you apply to get control burning, where you ask for them to send the fire officers on the site, where they would actually supervise any burning that persons have to be done on the farms, you have to pay $200 per hour. Now, the farmers have no problem in paying this $200 per hour. However, for some reason, there seems to be a problem in getting these things sorted out. And I'm appealing to the chief to please get in contact with the persons who have actually applied online and applied for the certificate, and please have some this all of this confusion cleared up. Because it is a major setback. Now, if they don't have sufficient fire officers, there are firemen who have retired, who I have spoken to, who said that they don't mind if the chief had to call them back to just go out and do this type of work.
Can you explain?
They will probably receive a stipend.
Can you explain why it is such a major setback?
Why it is such a major setback?
Yes, for people in the farming community.
Well, what happened is we have applied for the permit, and for some reason, I don't know if they don't have any persons there who can deal with replying to people because they don't even respond to you.
No, but I'm trying to get a sense of exactly what happens on the farm that makes this so important for you all, because everybody will be aware.
When you have a farm, you accumulate a lot of foliage, especially if you have a lot of coconut trees. And I know about three persons who have this problem, and they've told me that they have applied, and for some reason they're getting a lot of runaround. They're being told that the fire service they have a no-burn policy. So I don't really understand. To me, that is a dichotomous situation, because you can't say that you are allowing people to apply for a burn permit and then say that you have a no-burn policy. That does not make sense.
Well, that might be the way of stopping people from burning altogether.
Yeah, but if you try to stop people from burning, or we are trying to run a business with a farm, you have problems where you get a lot of rats breeding in that type of debris when it builds up. And that is why the farmers are asking for assistance to have this matter dealt with. Sometimes these fire officers are coming on the scene and they're telling you to get a skip. Or then telling you it's going to be too expensive. Now, I mean, if you are prepared to pay, the government needs money. So who is the fire officer to come on a site and tell somebody it's going to be too expensive? That is left to the farmer to decide, because he has to know what it is that he's trying to achieve. What is the objective? And people are trying to get rid of these breeding areas with the rats. And they are just there, in my view, fooling around and not responding. And people don't have time for this kind of nonsense. When you plant your melons and everything, and then the rats go and attack them, biting them up, we can't sell those. It has to be cleared up.
Well, you have made a very strong plea for this matter to be addressed. I heard about the need for the permit, but I was unaware that people like you were facing this kind of challenge with it. Thanks for drawing it to our attention. This is down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm on.
Yes, you are.
Yes, thank you. Yes. I just want to, that gentleman that spoke about the monkey with the passion, I sympathize with him and other farmers 1,000,000,000%. I sympathize with them. No doubt about it. But what I would like to say to the gentleman is that we don't only have a monkey problem. We have a gun problem. Every minute with this gun, three people, somebody losing their life. And secondly, I would like to take this gentleman in Bridgetown between Keir Shepherd and Norman Center and show him that not one of those telephones you can use, because they have been vandalized and destroyed by lawless person, not by monkeys. I would like to ask the gentleman, with no disrespect, to tell me how many places in Barbados people go right now and put in 25 cents in a payphone and use. The only place that he may be lucky to do that is maybe the QEH, because where those phones are located, nobody can go and destroy them and tamper with them with that kind of. Right now, I agree that the monkeys could be a problem, but right now, I would like to ask him, find my final question, which he would prefer now, to get rid of all the illegal guns that is in the wrong hands, that taking lives and sending people to the hospital are unnecessary, or to get rid of the monkey. Thank you very much, sir. That's my point.
All right. Thank you. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon.
One last call. Yes.
Yeah, Israel. Yeah, the guy that called about the PSVs and stuff.
Yes.
Those that ends need to be taken off the road. I think the buses need to be taken off the road. The PSV sector was over flooded. This was before the COVID, right? I am a PSV worker, right? It was over flooded. They started to put new routes out there, but they failed. You understand? Because so much permits was given up by the last government and even by this government too. So imagine now, COVID comes and they take taxis from the port and airport to put on the public road.
You know what the answer to that is, though? At the end of the day is, so what has happened to the customer in all of this?
The customer, as I call, I think I spoke to you before I was someone else. And they were trying to make sport out of it, but it is still out there. They're trying to say, oh, we had the customers at Ransom.
The customers complaining?
The customers complaining right now? Years before. I mean, before the events come out there, right? The customers, they ain't getting in advance, because the vans have newer vans, and the vans have air conditioning.
That's the only reason.
You understand?
There's no difference in...
Wait. That is that reason. If people want to say, oh, these ZRs and the minibuses rowdy, I were in the tour section as well. And the type of manner, and I see the people in the port, these is the ZM and the BT guys in the port getting on. I thought I was in the river stand 20 years
ago. The question is, and what has happened to service to the customer?
Is it serious?
It is.
Is it serious?
Well, that's not what the caller just said.
It's the same way. So he talking to the nonsense. Those fans need to go. You go if I run, see that driving up a down road with zero people.
I understand the problem. I understand what you're saying.
It is
competition for you. And therefore... Right.
It's a nuisance.
And therefore...
The other nuisance that was out there before... Yeah. The government is not taking off road. The other public service vehicles, guys that put the money in the court, those nuisance, they're not doing anything. Those guys put the money in the treasury.
Yeah. All right, well, we will discuss that in greater detail another day. For now, I want to thank you all very much for being involved in today's edition of the program. Thanks to Michelle Brathwaite, the technical operator and producer. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon. Thank you.